power 15 to 20 million
jobs.
I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again, everyone, to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, which serves on the radio southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. And on the internet, you can listen from anywhere in the USA simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. As always, I ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in, then sit back, relax, and enjoy, because we're going to have a very good broadcast today. I'd like to say, first of all, that our theme for 2018 has been getting a lot of PR, and that is we are encouraging America's businesses to highlight on their labels and packaging that their products are made or assembled here in the United States of America. I'm going to be doing a whole commentary on that this Saturday, and of course, congratulating our Eagles, and boy, what a week it was. It was unbelievable. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank and welcome our panel members, including Mark Andel, the well-known founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Conley, national small business advocate, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, I'm Michael Blihash, and also thanks to Curtis Ellis, as you know, who is the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance and well-known in all areas of the media, and also a senior advisor to President Donald Trump. We're going to be talking about a lot of issues on this Wednesday, February the 7th, and you are tuned into American Workers Radio, broadcasting from Philadelphia, home of the Super Bowl champions, the Philadelphia Eagles. And I'll tell you, we had an unbelievable amount of groups presenting all sorts of cheers and rap music and everything else. And I was happy that we were able to include our Eagles polka along with that. And we'll have to close our broadcast off with that today. Because, by the way, also being out this weekend at several events of us demonstrating that we are a team. We are really a team here on this broadcast. We've done a lot of good, and now we have more people in Washington thinking the way we think. We have more people in the states and in the cities thinking about getting people employed and getting those industries and jobs back. I want to also thank Mark Andel for having me on his Made in America radio broadcast from Buffalo, New York, this past Saturday the 3rd. It was great. It was a pleasure to be with Mark on the show. And you can hear a rebroadcast of the show from the link that's located on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. It's located right on the right side, right under the American Made store logo. I also, by the way, want to mention before I go to our panel, I heard from Mike Sessions on Monday, and he loved the Eagles polka and offered congratulations to our Super Bowl champions. And Mike Sessions enjoys the accordion and also the singing. So he said to make sure Larkin knows that. And I understand, which I'll find out later, that Larkin was an accordion player at one time and a disc jockey. See, I hear all these things, which I love. And that was great. But thanks to all who enjoyed that. It was good to hear it on our local programs. Hopefully they'll be playing it on one of the floats tomorrow, along with the Caribbean things and all of the rap selections that they have congratulating the Eagles. I'd like to, first of all, call on Mark Andel, because he is the man who has been a major example here in the USA. Mark, thanks for having me on your broadcast.
Yeah, welcome, guys, and hello, Mike, and congratulations to Philadelphia with the Eagles. Exciting night. What a game. Just a great game, and I just thought it was an awesome awesome win. You've got something Buffalo doesn't have now, Michael and Henry.
But I heard that Buffalo was one, per capita, was one of the areas with the biggest viewership. I heard that.
Yeah, we've one got of the great fans, but we are a lot of people who are rooting for Philadelphia. I'll tell you that.
Beautiful.
Great stuff, but you know, you were talking, you know, Eagles, a big win, and just the radio show, Mike, thank you for being part of our radio show. We got Made in America Store show now on WEC up here in Buffalo. And, Mike, a lot of compliments on you being our guest last week, Saturday and Sunday. It's just awesome. They said, what a nice guy, and, you know, couldn't believe how long you've been pushing what we believe in, and they think me and you could talk for days, you know.
Well, that's true, Mark. It's definitely true.
A lot of great comments. We got a lot of things going on up here, and I just wanted to touch on what the, you know, last week at General Welding Made in America, I had a couple employees say, hey, thank you. I said, for what? Oh, for the raise. And I'm laughing. I said, no, that was for President Donald Trump's administration. But a lot of people in their check here, and I did a little study, between $10 and $40, they received more in their paycheck. So that went right into their pocket. And then on a tax return, my one son did more, and he's going to get $1,000 back where he would have got $1,000 more than he would have got normally. And so instead of $1,000 in return, he's getting $2,000. I just bring that up, Mike, because like on World News or these news stations, why can't they do an interview and walk around and ask people, hey, did you get more in your check this week? How does that help you as a, you know, somebody on the ground that has you know, electric bills and running a family? Because to me, that's that shows you know, tangible evidence of good change, and I think that should be talked about because you hear so much negative, and I just wanted to bring that up. People don't realize you get – I was thanked by a lot of people, and I was laughing, but that hit everybody in the pocket for the positive, and if you have $10 to $40 more a week, you can go out and do different things or save more, or it makes a difference in your life, and I think that was an outstanding move to continue to keep this movement going and positive change in this country.
You're right, Mark, and one of the things I would only like to add is what the people see in their paycheck is also going to be seen by the business owners who are employing the people. We see so much negative publicity, and somebody said it was only crumbs and it was this and that. This is all stupidity. Today, there's so much negative publicity from the news media. We're tired of seeing it. There's too much time and money wasted. And by the way, who's paying for that? The viewers are paying? Are the advertisers paying? The special counsel and all this other negative stuff, it's taken the air out of the room, the bubble. It's killing. We want to see facts and figures, not people followed around. And by the way, who is paying the bill for all this following around the special counsel and all? I think he should have been authorized to do his job, sit down, present the facts, come before the United States people, come before the Congress, give his reports. Not every 2 hours, 2 days, we're hearing more. This is false. Now that's false. Give us the facts and figures, and who is paying the bill? I would like to know. Rich, you will know the answer to that. Who's paying the bill for all this?
All of us do, Michael.
But did we authorize it? Who is authorizing the paying of this bill? The American workers are going to work. They're paying the taxes. They don't want to pay for this.
Let me just say, first off, good morning to everyone and our listeners. Hope everyone's doing great. And congratulations to the city of Philadelphia. The NFL season, which by all metrics and measures sucked, was bailed out by a very entertaining – see, who wants – by a very entertaining Super Bowl. Who wants to watch a 10-7 game? I want to see touchdowns, right, Henry, our audio engineer?
He did see touchdowns. He did see.
I want to see – that's what I wanted to
unbelievable. See. Unbelievable. One was unbelievable.
And thank God the Eagles – well, number one, thank God Andy Reid wasn't – Andy Clock Management Genius – wasn't still the coach, right? Because Andy had Nick Foles as a quarterback, and Andy Clock Management Genius decided not to re-sign Nick Foles, Michael.
This is like a Cinderella story. He was out, then he came back, and look what he did.
Well, thank goodness the Eagles also didn't need – they only had to go 5 feet for a Super Bowl win and threw a shotgun slant over the middle, and thank goodness the Eagles weren't leading 28-3. With 16 minutes left in the game. So I have to confess that I'm going to miss saying the Jets have more Super Bowl wins than the Eagles. I'm going to miss saying it because it was always how I like to, you know, I like to jab. But, you know, if there was one team, I mean, a win is a win, right? But if there was one team to get a Super Bowl against, what better opponent than the Patriots?
Absolutely.
And Doug Peterson, Michael, called the head coach of the Eagles. He was the he's the I'm going to designate him the Patton of NFL coaching, because he his entire strategy was forget defense. The best defense is a great offense. We're going to attack, attack, attack. And lastly, my last comment regarding the Super Bowl. Mark, Frank Reich has a Super Bowl ring now.
Yeah, you're right. He's a great guy.
He's got a Super Bowl ring now. I mean, is that great or what? So congratulations to the Eagles. Everybody, please. Please, you know, be safe tomorrow. Don't destroy anything. Just everyone hang out. You know, if you want a couple cocktails, don't have them around, you know, young kids. Because I asked Henry, our audio engineer, if I needed to overnight him my firearms just in case he goes tomorrow. You know, I said, you need my firearms? I'll send them out if you need. Use hollow points. Don't use practice stuff when you carry. That's a waste, you know. Hollow points. So congratulations to the city. So, Michael, I just want to say that because that the whole city, I'm sure, is reveling right now.
Everybody is so happy. This is what we need in America, this happiness. We need to share this goodness. You know, we need good people speaking on TV, giving us ideas, presenting what people are not doing to go out of their way. Mark, you should be interviewed in every state of the union to give people ideas. The media will run because they'll say, oh, we should have been covering this kind of stuff a long time ago. Well, now let's turn the page and start covering the good stuff. But they don't want to do that.
You get that positive culture, like you said, Mike. That's what you're feeling in Philadelphia. Could you imagine a country with positive culture and attitude? Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. Just what we're experiencing in Philadelphia over a football championship. The American people should be feeling that same great feeling as we restore industries, restore jobs, get people back on their feet, lower their interest rates because they have too much money on credit cards and all. Let's get the focus on the American people and not all this crap. I'm going to ask Larkin Conley, where is this money coming from and how would you bring an end to all the negative publicity by pulling the plug on the American taxpayer paying the bill?
Well, good morning, Michael. Henry, I'm bending at the waist. My hands are high above my head. You're getting my direct bow. Congratulations. I do want to remind you to go back about 2 months and play a show in which I said to you, do not fret. Do not worry.
I remember.
And I told you that everything would be okay and that you were going to win the Super Bowl. And I predicted. It's a huge day for Philadelphia. Philadelphia has won Stanley Cups. They've won the NBA championship. They've won the World Series trophy. Philadelphia is a football town, and it's never won the Super Bowl. You now have, and it will change Philadelphia. I promise you it will change Philadelphia. You have, in my estimation, the best coach in the NFL today. You can have Belichick. It's just going to change things in Philadelphia. And I'm very proud. I was in Virginia watching that game with my son, and my wife really had to put her foot down. I was really going out to start the car to drive, you know, 4 or 5 hours to come up and witness this week. But all that being said, congratulations. You were far and away the better team. You had control of that football game no matter what Collinsworth or Michael said. The Eagles had control. They had a swamped affair that they carried themselves with. And sometime in the second quarter, I turned to my son and said, this is, you know, if you want to watch a movie, let's watch a movie. This is a done deal. Philadelphia will win this game. And Belichick, the greatest coach in the history of the game, got ripped. He got so out-coached, it wasn't funny. That's not supposed to happen to the greatest coach that ever lived, but whatever. And their quarterback, I'm telling you what, it was a huge victory, and I congratulate Philadelphia and all your fans. You deserve it, and have fun with it. I also want to congratulate Nancy Pelosi for being to me, the most arrogant. She just edged out Schumer for being the most arrogant politician I have ever heard speak before in my life. When she called the raise that everybody appreciated in their paycheck not enough to make a difference. She is arrogant, and she's worth a lot of money. She's a very rich woman. She is at the top of the list of the one percenters. And the fact that she would make a remark like that to the American voter and to the American citizens, to me, only amplifies the fact that she's completely and totally out of touch. She doesn't understand free enterprise all the way up to freedom of choice. The woman is completely, and as a result of the way she acted at the president's State of the Union, I think she ought to be run out of town. And, she and Maxine Waters and Schumer, oh, my Lord. One other thing, I've decided that I'm not going to hold Trump to task. I'm going to try to play the field I know best politically. So I am now, I'm going to ask everybody, I'd love everybody to answer, what is your political persuasion? Michael, what's your political persuasion?
Well, I would say, Larkin, that I go with the person, not the party. That's how I've been for years. And I know many quality Democrats and many quality Republicans, and I will tell people point blank, help this one. And whenever I do anything publicly, people say, well, wow, I thought you were Democrat or Republican. No, I'd say, because this person has shown himself or she has shown herself to be a quality person. Democrat, Republican, independent does not mean anything to me. It's the person, their message means everything.
Mark?
Yeah, I want to back what Michael said, because I always, Larkin, I say it's not an R thing or a D thing. And I laugh with President Trump. People wanted so much change, and they just won't give him or the people the credit that America voted for him. My father's Democrat, voted for Trump. Many, many people I meet that were Democrat voted for Donald Trump because he was the only way they could get change. And, so Larkin, I always say not very political, but, these days I talk to a lot of people where they've got to get involved because they see these people, I always said America got greedy, selfish, and lazy, but you see these lazy ones, and it's not fair to the good politicians, and I hope the good politicians are getting very upset and very mad at these ones like Pelosi or who's sitting there that shouldn't be there no more, that are so cancer negative that it's ruining the system. You can't even enjoy a tax increase or something more in her pocket, and you make comments because she doesn't know what it's like to, rub two dimes together and try
to make
that's
right, Mark. She doesn't know what it's like. And that is why it's time for new people to come forward. Let some of the people who have had a little experience with money come forward and show people and encourage people to do something positive with their life. These Pelosis, they've been around. That's why term limits are now something I'm really focusing on.
I knocked that out. Okay, so Rich, define yourself politically.
So I'm an America First guy, Larkin. I'm a small government, pro-working family, pro-small business. Doesn't matter to me who's offended for the government achieving its number one role is, which is to keep our citizens safe and protected. And to the credit of the president, he's ushered in that brand of politics that the GOP has a phenomenal opportunity to try to take advantage of right now. And we'll see if they will or not. So I think the president is. I think he's checking the boxes off, Larkin. I mean, stylistically, some people may not like certain methodologies, but I really think the brand of politics that's been ushered in is quite in alignment with a lot of what we talk about on this show.
Yeah, there's no question. Curtis, define yourself politically.
America first. America first, pure Trump, and economic nationalist. This is a creed that cuts, is an ideology that really should cut across partisan lines. Unfortunately, both parties, elements in both parties have become globalists, and they seem to believe that America is required and obligated to share its wealth in a socialist manner with the rest of the world, with the global community. I believe that the way to advance our people and even to advance the world and, people around the world is to concentrate on your own. Just as we feed our family before we feed the people down the street, we should build up our country, and then our country can help others who share our values. So I'm an America First person, and proud of it. That's my creed. First of all, it sounds like you guys down there in Philadelphia are not tired of winning yet. I love the sentiment. America should, it'd be great for all of us to feel the way you guys feel in Philadelphia. We are all winning. People are winning. The jobs are coming back. Never fast enough. I'll be honest, never fast enough, never enough. Wages are starting to rise, and part of that is because of the cutback in immigration, as well as the tax cut. The labor market's tightening. Even that blip we saw in the stock market the other day was because the traders felt, oh my gosh, there's upward pressure on wages, which is a fancy way of saying wages are going up. Businesses are going to have to pay people more. And that's a good thing. It might make the people on CNBC break out in hives, but it certainly makes the rest of us happy. And I couldn't agree more with what Larkin said about Nancy Pelosi. I mean, she's totally out of touch. She's really been stewing in the Washington sauce far too long. And, you know, it made me think that there's a thing called gratitude. And most people have gratitude for what they receive. I know every morning I say a prayer of gratitude for what I've been given, because I don't feel that I did this all on my own. You know, there's a higher power involved here, you know, God, whatever. God. I mean, there is a higher power involved, and it's through the gifts that we've been given by our Creator that we're able to serve and do what we do. But even something like, I'll tell you, I'd be very happy to get $20 more a week in my paycheck. And I know if I had a family, that $20 would mean maybe shoes that my kid outgrew. I could now get him another pair of shoes or another pair of jeans for my five-year-old who's growing like a weed and needs new clothes every few months or every several weeks. And these are not crumbs. These are clothes. This is a shirt on somebody's back, on my kid's back. This is another meal. Of course, $20 is not even a tip for the waiter in the restaurants that Nancy Pelosi eats in, but that's not the way people live. And why aren't and it's very telling that the media, the TV reporters aren't out there asking people, so how much more did you see in your paycheck? What does that mean to you? What are you going to be doing with that?
Yes.
I worked in television news. I know how this works. This is not speculation. This is not make-believe, I imagine. I saw it. When these folks go out and do a story, let me speak first person. When I would go and when I was sent across town with my camera crew to cover a story, I was writing the story before I got there to interview people. And I had the script emailed back to the headquarters where the editor approved it before I even interviewed the people who were going to tell me what the story was. Right? I would leave a blank spot in there, and it would say in the script, soundbite from person X. And the point being, the media writes the stories, they create the stories before they even gather the facts on the ground. They have a pre-cooked narrative. And what we're seeing with the Trump administration and their coverage of the Trump administration is that this is the major media are a propaganda arm, or at least they have a preconceived notion of how the world is going to work, how the world is supposed to work, and the facts are then twisted to fit their narrative. They don't simply go out there and look for facts and tell the people what's going on. They have a point of view, and they make their information gathering conform and fit into the frame that they've already chosen. So they don't want to go out there and ask people, how much more did you see in your paycheck? What are you going to do with that? What does that mean to you? Because that doesn't fit the narrative they've already decided on, which is...
Well, Curtis, can I interject? It's Rich.
Please.
How you doing? Because I want to make a point. What do we call that media complex again, Curtis? What
the D-mic, the D-mites,
the D-mic. Thank you,
the
thank
termites.
You, thank you, thank you so much. pretty appropriate, right? The Democrat media industrial complex. You know, to add to that point that you're saying, which is 100% correct. When someone, if you guys may have noticed this, Katie Turr, who's from NBC. Whom I gotta say, every time I see Katie Turr, she looks like she's just way in over her head doing that job. I mean, I'm not saying that, sort of saying that sympathetically. She asked somebody in Ohio about the $1,000. And then the story, the subsequent story was to then basically condescend upon the $1,000 because the person said she wanted to use it to save for a home and college education, I think. So the story was this person was going to use $1,000 to save for XYZ. And the story is, but it costs X amount to have a child in Ohio, and it costs X amount to have to obtain a college education. And I thought, see that right there, Curtis, that's where the D-mic just can't help themselves, right? They just it's a disease. It's like a weird illness, Mark, that they have. That no matter the story, we have to impugn the integrity and the intelligence and patriotism of Trump voters. Is that not correct, Mark? Do you think that's true? Because I do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They can't help themselves. It's like a weird. It's like a tick. You know, like you've ever met people. They have a tick that they have. You know, like that's the D-mic with these stories. And you know, let's bring it out there. Let's just be honest about it. You know, most of the D-mic.
All right, Curtis, you worked in the media. Rich, you worked in the media. I work in the media. Let me ask you this. How do we stop this and get these people to refocus?
You don't, Michael.
Wait,
the answer
wait.
Is you don't.
How
you
about don't. If we start to don't. Starve them out by contacting the advertisers and say, this is not what we're looking for.
Well,
we're
that's
not
a
looking
issue.
For a
that,
balloon type issue where we all live in one balloon instead of being able to be free.
Look, we talk a lot about the media, the D-mic on the show, and I talk a lot about it because it's a very important part of my brand. But if we have to pick, Michael, what to do, the action plan, every one of us should go and do what we did in the lead up to the election. Rally your neighbors, rally your friends, rally your family members, get involved locally, go convey the message. What's the RNC's plan to make sure that the Democrats don't take control of the House this year? Because if they take control of the House, Curtis, the moment that the last Democrat is sworn in, they start impeachment proceedings. And I am telling you guys on this show right now that if they actually went and did that, that's the Democrats' version of Fort Sumter. We think back in history, Fort Sumter was the start of the Civil War. That's the Democrats' version of it.
And that's a nice conjecture, but listen, honestly, you have to have grounds. You can't just impeach somebody.
Yeah, right, that's right.
He's got to break a law. He's got to be found guilty of some... a level of treason or a crime, you know, they would just make fools out of themselves. Let me introduce a new word that would be depoliticalize this just a little bit. You know, I studied for 4 years and got a bachelor's degree in journalism. And when I learned the trade, certainly in an academic environment, we learned that it was who, what, when, where, why. Give me the facts. You want to opine, then you define it as opinion and you put it on the opinion page. Right now, I can't pick up the New York Times that they opine in the first paragraph of every story on the front page, especially when it comes to political issues. They've cut, so they're not journalists. They're not. They're the furthest thing in the world from journalists. They're what I call mediatainment people. They've got the media. And Joy Behar is just the perfect example of one of these people. Mediatainment. She has no more right speaking on a political level than I do saying mass for the Pope. It's just absolutely bizarre. She's a comedian, a stand-up comedian, and an entertainer. And she gets on this program she's on in the morning. They finally, she's left. And that's what we're dealing with now. These aren't journalists. These aren't hardcore Jim Cardi journalists from the Nashville Tennessean. These are entertainers. They are mediatainers.
You're right, Larkin. Larkin, could we encourage people to Facebook, Instagram, email, make contacts to the advertisers and say, you're advertising to people who are stopping to watch. Maybe you should advertise in a more positive way. I'll tell you what I did. You were talking about our political preferences. This past election, after all the summer months and going to all the summer events, I pleaded with people to go out and vote, not for either side. I said, please go out and vote for the presidential election so that we have a clear vision of what the American people want. And we did get a clear vision. Now, the people that I went out, that I spoke to, were like surprised that I didn't say, well, vote for Hillary or vote for Trump. I said, no, let your conscience be your guide. And we don't have that in the media. The media is trying to push their point of view on us, re-educate us in a negative way, and yet they're being paid to do it by their advertisers.
I mean, Curtis, I listen to Fox. I turn them on every once in a while, and I don't think they're any better at their reporting than CNN is. You know where they stand. I watched that blonde-haired guy on CNN whose mother was the... Oh, you know who I mean. I can't think of his name. I purposely probably can't think of his name. But these guys are entertainers. They're no more journalists than I am the Pope. I mean, it's just, it's bizarre. And yet they continually walk around going, well, no, I'm a journalist. I'm a true, no, you aren't. You're no more a journalist than I am the Pope. And it's just really that simple. They're all media and mediatainment is what I'm going to call it right now. From now on. Actually, they
are. I couldn't agree with you more.
Mediatainment.
Couldn't agree with you more. There was last night, speaking of Fox, I was watching Fox, and Cheryl Atkinson was on. Cheryl Atkinson used to be CBS reporter. And she is on the conservative end of the spectrum, and she kind of got drummed out of the whole industry now. But she was saying that what happened is the news departments, the television news departments, started inviting in these opinion people, and now the opinion people have sort of infected the entire news operation. So everybody is now quite blatant about expressing their opinions and slanting everything according to their opinion. I mean, look at Rachel Maddow. Maddow is an opinion journalist. She's an opinion person, but she uses the affectations of a journalist. And unfortunately, as the new generation comes along and viewers are watching, they don't know the difference. And they start to think that Rachel Maddow is a journalist. And they think that expressing the opinion and slanting the news is part of the job. Now, in a way, you could say this is a good thing. The good thing is people need to watch these, everyone critically. Everybody has an opinion. As hard as you try not to have an opinion, you have an opinion. This is a neurological, physiological certainty that it's called bias compliance. Our brains, unconsciously, they work so fast that even before it reaches the conscious level, we start filtering information to fit our preconceived bias. We discount that which doesn't fit the bias, or we ignore it, or we just plain don't see it. This is the meaning, the esoteric meaning of the statue of blind justice. You would think that if you want justice, you know, the woman holding the scale and she has a blindfold on. In a superficial understanding of the process, you would think you would want justice to have open eyes, to be all-seeing, and to see what's right and what's wrong. But the understanding of that image, of that allegory, is that we understand that our eyes lie to us. Our eyes fit our preconceived bias. So we must blindfold ourselves to our preconceived bias in order to get something close to an accurate judgment. Unfortunately, all the journalists on TV are not aware of their own biases in many cases. I think, really, or they're not, let's put it this way, they're not aware of how their own biases are shaping their judgment. They are absolutely certain that Donald Trump colluded with the Russians, that he is a, you know, fill in the blank, and that the only way to raise wages is to pass a law, and that America is a racist, xenophobic, deplorable country by birth. And go down the list. They've got a whole list of things that they are absolutely certain of. You know, and this is what Mark Twain talked about when he, in his beautiful quote, "It ain't what you don't know that gets you in trouble. It's what you know that just ain't so." These people know so much, and they're absolutely certain, but it just ain't so. I think Ronald Reagan paraphrased that, and he said, "It's not that my Democratic friends are ignorant. It's just that what they know isn't so." So we all have to be careful. So there ought to be classes, and in school, teach people how to critically watch the media. Every paper has a bias. Going back to the early days of the Republic and even before, it was well known that the newspaper you picked up had a point of view. The New York Post was founded by Alexander Hamilton so that there would be a Federalist slanted newspaper in New York because the other papers were Jeffersonian in bias. It's only after the post-war, only after World War II, really, that and the rise of the big media, of the big three television networks, that this notion, this illusion that we had objective media, that these people were all-seeing, all-knowing, unbiased, objective, and you didn't have to think critically, just accept what they say, it's the truth, don't worry about it, be lazy, and they're going to give you the received wisdom, and all you have to do is receive it, pre-digested, don't think about it. That's a very dangerous way of thinking. That's Pravda.
That is Pravda, absolutely.
And we have now American Pravda, and these people are parading around, acting as if they're the gatekeepers of truth, justice, and they don't even want to call it the American way because America is a deplorable institution. But they're the absolute gatekeepers of truth, social justice, and all that's good in the world. And if you disagree with them, you are, you know, something else. And it's just one last thing I want to add. I mean, really, this whole coverage of the memos and the Intelligence Committee and the findings now, that it's just a spectacle. It's amazing to watch. The media, reporters who are supposed to believe in the dissemination of information are twisting themselves in pretzels to say, well, we don't need to know. The idea that the FBI maybe was withholding information in order to conduct surveillance on a political campaign, the FBI officials withheld evidence and didn't tell the judge that the information they were presenting the judge came from a political opposition research document. Oh, that doesn't matter. We don't need to know that. Who cares? Don't question the FBI. That's unpatriotic and un-American. For the Democrats to be presenting themselves as the defenders of law enforcement after the last 8-9 years, they have been slamming cops from Ferguson to Baltimore as racist thugs, and now they're trying to present themselves as how dare you question law enforcement? It's laughable.
It is. It is. You're right. Oh, my God, Curtis, you're absolutely right.
And then for the media to be saying after, you know, they're going to probably give an Oscar to Tom Hanks or Meryl Streep for, you know, for the movie The Post about the heroic journalist who exposed deep state government secrets, revealing that the Vietnam War was a lost cause and everybody knew it, but they weren't telling Americans about it. And 55,000 Americans died and they had the courage to go against the government and reveal these secrets. Now that same media is saying, we don't want to know. Don't tell the American people about what the FBI may have been doing to rig the system. No, we don't want to know about that. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They've really discredited themselves. They fouled the nest. They've destroyed their reputation. And I just pray that the Congress, because the media is not asking the questions, I pray that the Congress, the Republican Congress, gets to the bottom of this and keeps asking questions. Today we learned that President Obama wanted to be informed about every step of the Clinton email investigation. And this is after he went on TV and said, I am not involved in that. I don't know anything about it. I don't want to know. I don't get involved in these investigations. I hope they ask, well, if there was a counterintelligence operation going on that was conducting surveillance, let's put it in plain English, was spying on the Trump campaign in the midst of a presidential election, was this did this rise to the level of importance that maybe the White House National Security Director was told about it? Do you think that a counterintelligence operation involving the presidential campaign of a major political party rose to the importance that it would be included in the president's daily intelligence briefing? Basically, what did Obama know and when did he know it about this? Was he kept in the dark that the FBI was spying on the Trump campaign? Was he not told about it? Was he not told that there was suspicion that the FBI believed the Russians were involved somehow with the Trump campaign? Do you think that might have been important enough to tell the president or his right-hand national security director? Where are these people? Why aren't they being hauled before Congress, put under oath, and made to answer some questions?
And you're right, Curtis, and I would like to see it done in a much quicker manner, because from what's happening,
because if the Democrats take control of the Congress in November, they will not ask those questions. You can be sure of that.
Absolutely. But I will say this. Who is paying for this and why are we paying? I mean, this is going on for over a year. And after a year, we find out it's virtually worthless. What went on?
Exactly. Look, as I said before,
who paid all those bills that cost tens and tens of millions of dollars?
That's just crumbs to Nancy Pelosi.
Well, that's right. And by the way, talking about crumbs, I had a very, very heated argument with a person from the media. And they said, you don't understand. All of these American businesses are making huge profits. And I said, well, that's fine if they make a profit, because people are paid when a business is able to make a profit. No profit, no employees. What the hell is the problem?
No profit.
I said the problem is the American business people are not being recognized in the media for doing a good job to keep profit moving so they can keep people employed.
Yeah.
No profit, no employees. It's his bottom line. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah, profit and cash flow are the blood in the water of the business.
But the media has twisted the minds of the American people. They are the rich, the 1%, the 2%, the 5%. They're making all the money and you're just getting paid.
But why, Mike, when Linda McMahon came up, why do they want to hear from Mark Handel and all these businesses we represent? Because they want to hear what we're going through in the game and today's model and how hard it is to make $1 and to create livelihoods and give people comfort and security. Mike, I want to switch gears a hair. Did anybody see the WeatherTech commercial in the Super Bowl?
Yes.
You know, we sell the, you know, the bed liner or the feet, you know, liners and the liners that go in your vehicles and for your floor mats and whatnot. But what a great commercial. You know, at first you see the concrete, they're digging, their concrete's going up, the roof goes on, the sign goes on. And at the end, you know, it basically said something, you know, we're building our factory in America, shouldn't everybody? But what a beautiful commercial. WeatherTech gets it. They always put them commercials are $3 million to $5 million. And WeatherTech nailed it. It's one of the top 10 commercials. And it brings me to the skilled trade shortage, too. I had an interesting meeting called last week. It was, I won't say what the product is, but it's a product being manufactured in Canada. Pretty substantial. And a couple called, and they wanted to come to the United States. So they came to see me last Friday, met my team. The reason they were here is because Canada is already has an extreme problem with skilled trade shortage, skilled worker shortage. The company they were having this product made was 10 skilled workers short already. They're using Mexican Mennonites. They don't have no skilled trades. It's causing inflation, causing everything to go up. And we hit it off so well, this Canadian couple and myself, we couldn't believe it, but what I talk and we preach and we talk about is so serious. It's already affected Canada. And they have no skilled trade workers. We need them. I've got some great speeches coming up this week in schools I'm visiting and talking about what we're going through and trying to get this exposure and get kids exposed and get this one-size-fits-all mentality out of the schools so these kids can go with what they want to and what they think might be cool. Canada out of skilled trade workers. Skilled trade workers, Canada, this couple came to me to have their product made because they can't have it made anymore in Canada because the company they use has such a skilled trade shortage with the growth of their economy, it's causing this shortage even to amplify more. So they come to Mark Andel General Welding in the United States of America to have the product made. They were surprised. I have a similar problem, but Canada's already has an extreme shortage of the skilled trades and is affecting their business and their growth of their economy in these good times because the employment rate, I think it's down to 2% there, which is you're always going to have 2%, somewhere around there. But yeah. What's your take? Well, the skilled trade shortage is already affected Canada, which I believe is 30 million people, whatever. It's such a big problem. I always said it should be the number one thing talked about. We cannot continue to grow our economy, unfortunately, without answering this education skilled trade shortage.
Absolutely, absolutely. Look, I was, when I was working in Congress 10 years ago, went to a shipyard in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, where they build the Great Lakes freighters. There's a whole fleet of ships that just work the Great Lakes. They had a shortage then. They could not fill their positions for skilled welders, pipe fitters, things like that to make these ships. That was 10 years ago. These were $50,000 a year jobs. And I'll tell you, 50 grand a year in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin goes a long way. They could not find people to fill it. This is a huge problem. By the way, on the WeatherTech commercial, at first I thought it was a commercial for building the wall.
Yeah.
I thought it was.
I was when you watch it a few times, right?
Yeah. It's like, oh, all right, this is America first. We're going to build that wall. I love WeatherTech. They're great.
Well, you know, Mark, talking about what you're saying about the skilled shortage, in Pennsylvania, the governor gave his annual budget address yesterday. Governor Wolf, a Democrat, gave his remarks about we need to look at all of our schools and we need to look at what we have to do to get people into the skills once again. President Donald Trump, a Republican, also mentioned that we have to do something about restoring the trades and things and worker shortages and all with American workers during the State of the Union. I mean, it's now on the idea of the people. It has to get on the table with the school boards and the people going to the school board meetings. We have to restore it. I got a call from Walt Jakubowski. You remember him from our radio broadcast. The skilled shortage is so unbelievable everywhere you go.
Yes.
And it's got to be addressed by the hierarchy. Remember, example comes from the top.
And I only bring up Canada because this couple, this was a major company that has a serious problem. They cannot have their product made anymore there. They're trying to come to our country and have me make it. I just, you know, this is where we're going to get it, and we're addressing it, but I don't think at the right speed. I don't think people realize how the economy is growing, but we need workers.
That's exactly right. And here is another problem, as you remember with Sarah Blackwell, what she said. Every time there was growth in the economy, there was also the desire to bring in foreign workers who were skilled in these particular trades, to bring them to America or to send the jobs over there, mainly to bring the workers here. Why is it that our institutions of learning are not producing high school and college graduates able to enter all of these fields, yeah, especially now that there are so many robotics and technology integration? Everything is very important.
But
where are
that
they at?
Stigma, that stigma we built up on skilled trades has to be destroyed, and it has to be. It can't be one size fits all. They have to, parents, guidance counselors have to allow their kids to learn a trade if they'd like to.
I think that it has to be mandated. What do you think of that, Richard? Do you think in school we have to mandate that a portion of the money has to go to the trades? Because everybody is not ready for college, but they are ready to be employed. Every working age and able-bodied person needs to be employed.
Yeah, I mean, Mark is someone who, to be honest with you guys, has put this, you know, he's put this issue in my forefront. And, you know, and ultimately the job market and growing industries should at least in some part influence and dictate what kind of education kids receive. And I think now is the time. I think it's been the time, Michael. So the short answer is yes. And what I would add to it is that, not to get into a rant about college, but for some high school students, they're better suited in skilled trades and those types of schools and learning environments.
And I think one of the things that Michael said that is the most important is this is not the responsibility of the United States Department of Education.
Yeah, correct.
They've already a marvelous job of literally take a look at the date that we developed that operation, the United States Department of Education. I mean, to the date is when the bottom fell out of our education system, and we went from first and second and third in the world to almost no place. The fact of the matter is we're going to fix this problem. It's going to be fixed on a local basis.
Local is perfect. That's right.
And I want to be clear. I'm not down. I'm not against college. I tell every student I meet or kid, you should at least get a two-year degree in today's world because you need it. I don't down college at all. I'm just saying in the high schools, 9th grade, 10th, 11th, 12th, expose our kids to.
But you know also something, you're right, Mark, but in Europe, you do get a degree for the skilled work as well.
There you go.
And we have to restore that in America. At one time, you exited our middle schools and high schools, and you had a knowledge of where you were going to go. If you were going to go forward, you could go into a specialty shop training program for a year or two or to a college, but you knew at least where you were going.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to continue this particular conversation next week. But this final selection is a salute to the tens of thousands of people that linked on to hear this particular selection, all of the radio broadcasters that have been playing it. I want to thank you for doing it. The Polish American String Band is really going berserk with all this stuff. Henry, hit it. The best to all of you. God bless. This one's especially for Mike Sessions, Larkin Connolly, and all of you.
Not tired of winning yet.
Grab a partner and shout it out loud. Join in the Eagles polka. The Eagles from Philly, they're number one. Strike up the Eagles polka.
Henry really stands out.
Everybody has the mania for the Eagles from Pennsylvania.
Fly, Eagles, fly. You are the very best. Fly, Eagles, fly. You stand out from all the rest. Share the feeling. The Eagles are number one. It's time for a good year, because everyone is here to cheer for Philly's Eagles.
And we are here, and it's going to be a great parade tomorrow. The weather is going to be great. My thanks to Larkin Conley, Rich Loges, Curtis Ellis, and Mark Andel for all of their outstanding participation. I'm happy to be your host. Thanks to our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. You will receive a copy of today's rebroadcast in the mail in a few hours. Until we meet in my travels, or I hear you or see you on the radio this Saturday, my best wishes to you and yours. Until next Wednesday at 11, stay well, be happy. Hear our rebroadcast and the Eagles polka online in about 2 hours. Thanks. Have a great one.
Have a great week, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Everybody have a great week.